The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Michael White, and this is Conference Daily from the Labour Party in Manchester. Well, he dispatched Brother David in a nail-biting contest to become Labour leader. Now, Ed Miliband used his first keynote speech to call for a clean break with the party's Blair Brown era.
Let the message go out. A new generation has taken charge of Labour. Optimistic about our country. Optimistic about our world. Optimistic about the power of politics. We are the optimist, and together we will change Britain. Thank you very much.
That was the Labour leader's peroration. We'll hear how it all went down shortly, but there was a lot of pressure on Miliband today, and before his address to the conference, I toured the floor of the arena and asked what members actually wanted to hear from him.
I think he has got to draw a line. The past, he's got to show that we are the party of the future. I believe that the leadership election has shown to the nation the quality of the candidates that will be forming the next cabinet. So I think it reminds me very much of the Blair era. I remember when
you're
they...
You're not meant to say that anymore, are you?
I can, because I remember they called Blair Bambi, if you remember, and he got these two Rottweilers at the side of him called Gordon Brown and John Prescott, and they said he could never actually develop a leadership style and a partnership. He did exactly that, and I believe that Ed Miliband has got those qualities of actually bringing a team together that's going to take us into government.
I tend to think we shouldn't be focusing on the cuts as much as we should be focusing on increasing revenue and increasing employment. I can see arguments for both positions on the cuts, but there's no way we can cut until unemployment's going down, revenue's going back up, because we don't want to be Ireland.
All these people are the same. If he's Red Ed, then David Cameron is Red Dave. They all have absolutely no distinguishing marks, and I don't like any of them, so why should I care what he says to soften it?
Okay, well, that's a clear position. Thanks. In case anybody didn't spot that immediately, that was Peter Hitchens, a ferocious columnist of the Mail on Sunday these days, I think, and of course brother of Christopher.
I think it's more about the people watching it on telly at home. You've had 2.5-3 months talking to the people in the conference hall and Labour parties members all over the country. I think it's time for us to start talking to the country at large.
So, advice there that Miliband reach out and talk to the country. This was a speech that would have to address and engage with a watching public. That was what was needed, delegates said. The starting point, the new leader said, was to accept why his party had lost power on May the 6th.
We need to learn some painful truths about where we went wrong and how we lost touch. We must not blame the electorate for ending up with a government that we don't like. We should blame ourselves. We have to understand why people felt they couldn't support us. We have to show we understand the problems people face today. Let me tell you, this will require strong leadership. It won't always be easy. You won't always like what I have to say, but you've elected me leader, and lead I will.
On the all-important economic question, Ed Miliband said he would carry the fight to the opposition.
And when you reduce your economic policy simply to deficit reduction alone, you leave Britain without a plan for growth, which is what this government has done. No plan for growth means no credible plan for deficit reduction. We must protect those on middle and low incomes. They did nothing to cause the crisis, but are suffering the consequences. I say, the people who caused the crisis and can afford to do more should do more, with a higher banking levy allowing us to protect the services people rely on.
But he also hit out at those, primarily in the media, of course, who have already tried to paint him as a pantomime villain.
And that brings me to some of the names I've been called in this election. Wallace, from Wallace and Gromit. I gather some people can see the resemblance. Forrest Gump. Not so much, I think. And what about Red Ed? Come off it. Let's start to have a grown-up debate in this country about who we are, what we believe, and what kind of country we want to build.
Well, I'm standing at the back of the hall just as people come out. That's the music and the applause and the end of the Ed Miliband debut speech. Lasted about an hour. A very well-turned, a very well-polished performance in every way. It'd be fascinating to see how it's received.
I thought it was an inspiring speech. I thought it was exactly the right approach. And I think it sets the agenda for not only the centre ground of politics, but where the Labour Party should be for the next 5 years.
Well, I think that was pretty impressive. He has a lot of work to do for the present and the future of the party, and we congratulate him.
I thought it was a very good speech in the circumstances. You know, it's been a tough few days. You know, Ed was not expected to win. His brother was expected to win. There have been a lot of tensions there. There are a lot of apprehensions in the crowd. I think he covered and touched most bases.
What did you think of that?
Fantastic.
What did you like
fantastic.
About it?
I like the optimism. I like the fresh feeling. I like the acknowledgement of things that haven't worked in the past, but that it wasn't all a complete waste of time. You know, there's a huge amount to build on and to move forward.
That noise we can hear in the background, they're selling copies of the speech for £2 over there. The Labour Party always short on money. There it goes. Trying to raise a few bob. With me now is Jonathan Friedland, Guardian columnist. He's just come out from the hall too. What do you think of that, Johnny?
I thought it was solid. I don't think it soared, but I think that's fine at this early stage. You know, he's still got time to find his voice. I think the last passage people obviously liked. I was struck by the content of it. I thought he did a very good job of not seeming to retreat under fire and suddenly scurrying to the centre ground or rightward to shake off the Red Ed label. So he gave a good show of seeming very defiant on, for example, defending trade unions and the principle of trade unions. But similarly, managed to balance that with a few moves, saying, for example, and getting the conference to applaud, saying there mustn't be a wave of irresponsible strikes. So I thought he did that quite elegantly.
He did a lot of balancing, didn't he, on the one hand, on the other hand.
All of that. And that's, I mean, my theme for the piece I'm going to write for the paper will be that this was sort of New Labour 2.0. I think he still did the old New Labour trick of balancing, you know, firm but fair, tough but tender. Still, he did new versions of that, trying to shear off at the edges the excesses that people didn't like.
Thank you. What did you think of it? Jim Murphy, the former Scottish Secretary.
I thought it was a really strong speech. First of all, it was a very personal speech. He said, this is me, this is what made me who I am, this is the family that I come from. Of course, he's up until now been less well-known than his brother, David, but I think that probably starts to change today. I thought it was a man who stamped his own personal authority on the Labour Party. The conference enjoyed it, but more importantly, I hope the country, and I'm sure the country, listened with great care. A very thoughtful man with real passion.
Anything which surprised you about it?
I think the way in which he focused kind of relentlessly on optimism. I thought a really strong line was, Mr. Cameron, you were the optimist once.
Of course, pinching Cameron's line there, isn't he? You were the future once, he said to Tony Blair.
A direct retort to, I think, of course, Tony Blair about you were the future once. Now, but I thought what was really also very strong was the fact that he said, you might not like to hear this, but I'm not going to oppose every cut. And come the next election, I can't reverse every cut. And I thought that was a really strong statement that Labour will remain credible on the budget and on the deficit.
Are you reassured by that, Alistair Darling?
Yeah, I thought it was a powerful speech. I welcomed his realism in relation to the economic difficulties we face. I agree with him that we've got to get the deficit down. He's very, very clear about that. But equally, I share his concern that the present government don't have a plan for growth, and the risk of derailing the recovery is a very real one. So I thought it was a powerful speech.
Any surprises for you in tone or content?
No, I have known Ed for a long time, and I think that some of the things he was saying, particularly I found refreshing, the willingness to work with other parties if they get things right, just as you will disagree with them when they get things wrong. I thought that was a very welcome approach.
Alistair Darling there. Well, we've all had a chance to digest it now, so I'm here with columnist Polly Toynbee and our tireless live blogger, Andrew Sparrow. Polly, what did you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I hate conference speeches. I thought this had a tone of honesty, authenticity, a lot less schmaltz and constructed nonsense than most speeches do. I felt he believed everything he said, which is quite a good start.
That's terrible. That's what I think too. You and I make a career out of disagreeing. Andy, did you think it was that good?
I didn't think it was that good, no. I expected something a bit more inspiring, and we were told that Ed Miliband was a great charismatic figure, and I thought the stuff about optimism was by his team. I thought by the stuff on optimism was good. I thought the stuff about new generation was good, but there was nothing there that really sort of lifted the hair on the back of my neck or made me think I'll remember a word of this speech in a year's time.
I don't think I want the hair on the back of my neck lifted, thank you very much. I want somebody to say something that sounds as if they mean it, sounds as if they know what direction they're going in, sounds as if they know where the traps are and what's difficult, which I think he did. He indicated all the pitfalls along the way, dealt with them quite elegantly, but sounded as if he really wanted to get something done and believed in what he was saying.
Was anything in it that surprised you, Andy?
No, and I think that was one of the problems, really. I felt this was the allegation, the criticism of him has been that he was someone who's going to offer the Labour Party therapy, and they got an hour of therapy today. I've just been reading the reaction from all the trade union general secretaries, and they couldn't have been happier. And they are so the notion that he was going to sort of stand up and tell them that we're going to have to take some hard decisions on cuts and strikes, I don't think he got that message across.
He did say we're not going to support the useless, pointless strikes. He praised them, and then he said, you know, being responsible doesn't mean supporting duff strikes.
To me, that sounded perfunctory. That didn't sound like someone who's kind of up for a fight. Whether he may be up for a fight, we just don't know. I'm going to think it wasn't a bad speech. It didn't crash, but I don't think it defined him or sort of changed our picture of him or did anything that's going to sort of budge the polls.
Anything offend you, Polly?
Nope, nothing offended me, but I was glad to see that he was going to be tough about strikes, because that's where he's going to be tested. You know, there will be the Bob Crows and the PCS and others, and maybe a lot of others, who will try and come out on strike and alienate people instead of attracting their sympathy. And he knows that the Labour Party has to be on the side of the people, not on the side of the trade unions, when it comes to strikes about cuts.
One thing which repeatedly struck me was that he says... He sets out in a very balanced way what he's in favour of and what he's against, but he didn't tell us at any point how we might get from A to B. I'll give you one specific example. He's in favour of immigration. Heavens, he's an immigrant son himself, but he's also in favour of protecting local workers' rights from being undercut by cheaper or smarter foreign workers. Now, that's grand, but how do you do both?
And another thing on that, he said he was in favour of working with a coalition where he agrees with them. But on AV, which is going to be a big political issue beginning of next year, all he said was that he would vote in favour of it. He didn't even give a commitment to campaign for it. I didn't get a sense that he was kind of reaching out to other parties or that he kind of understood new politics in the way that I came away from the Lib Dem conference feeling there's a bunch of people who really think the political dynamics of Britain have changed.
But did you notice how the crowd in the audience all shouted and cheered at that? I didn't expect it, because I think it's very 50-50 here about AV. But actually, there was a great deal of hot support for that. So, you know, maybe he will be able to persuade his party to get out there and fight for it.
I'm always a little puzzled when people talk about the new politics, since I rather take the view of the new politics as much like the old politics. Can somebody explain to me what he said or didn't say which passed the test or didn't on that score, apart from AV?
I know what he meant, and it was rather an internal message about the Labour Party, that he has drawn a line under the, you know, last tattered remnants of what was left of New Labour, the dreadful last days of Brown, the awful last few months of Blair and Mandelson selling their books over the dead body of Labour. And he's drawing a line under that and said, right, the new politics says to hell with all of that. That's the old generation. They've gone. The real message is there is a new generation in charge of Labour. Come and have a look at us again. We're not the same as the old lot.
To give him credit on that point, there wasn't... One of the things about old politics was you come to these party conferences and they would deliver speeches where they would there would be a ritual assault on the leader of the other party, normally with some appalling jokes and sort of mad, inane insults. We didn't get any of that. That, I thought, was reassuring.
Andrew Sparrow there and Polly Toynbee. Well, that's nearly all from us, but before we go... The Guardian's cartoonist Steve Bell is with me. He's caricatured party leaders from Margaret Thatcher onwards, and something tells me he's going to enjoy Ed Miliband.
Well, he's very promising material, Ed. He's got features that lend themselves to caricature. I can only say that he's actually really quite easy to do, which is always a great thing for caricaturists.
You see these things with different eyes from normal people. What are the details which have got you excited about Miliband that we don't see?
Well, the thing about Ed is his eyes. He's got these two very, very staring, but also very sort of dark, round eyes. So
put rings under them,
aren't they? Yeah, panda eyes in some ways.
That's what you've done with him this morning. Yeah. You've turned him into a panda with X-ray eyes who can see through his brother's entire body. I've got that roughly right, haven't I?
Yeah, death ray panda, to be more accurate. Yeah, yeah.
You heard that right. Death ray panda. That's the news, everyone. It was Steve who did for John Major with the underpants and the Superman routine. And who else have you slaughtered in this way, Steve? Remind us.
I've never slaughtered anybody. I tried to slaughter Margaret Thatcher, but I spent expended years of venomous hatred in ink and no effect whatsoever.
She had enormous revolving eyes too in your world,
didn't
she?
She had one enormous revolving eye.
And so did Tony Blair, now we come to think.
Tony Blair had exactly the same thing, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's, we all have asymmetrical faces, I think, but that's what gives us all our distinct characters. But I think with Blair and Thatcher, there was a kind of mania inside them which came out in a sort of flash.
Messianic, I think the word, yeah.
Messianic gleam, it's described as, and they both had it. It's you have to wait on what they do. You know, they have to do something before you can sort of lay into them. And that's a bit of a problem at the moment because they're all youngsters. They're actually just quite blanks. They haven't done much, like Clegg, Cameron.
Are they all the same in a way? They strike me as being striking. Tall, good-looking, sort of south of England, Oxbridge, blah, blah, blah. There's a sort of sameness about them.
That might be the reason to do with our age, Mike, because...
Oh, stop it.
But yes, you're right. Yeah, there is early 40s, young, you know, in the case of Cameron and Clegg, both public school, very confident, very... But, I mean, Ed's got a kind of confidence himself, though he's Haverstock comprehensive.
Who else in the rising generation who's looking promising? People who are walking caricatures, as you so unkindly put it a moment ago.
Of Labour people, I suppose Yvette Cooper's good. She's a very striking-looking lady. She's got an amazingly long neck. Very interesting face. I was observing her yesterday.
Yvette.
No, she's great. And of course, her hubby, Ed Balls, is another one. Good subject for caricature. I haven't done him much, but I think he will come on.
Yeah, he certainly will. Yeah, because?
He's got this kind of pugilistic manner and
so
face.
He does.
We were talking actually earlier about whether they should wear glasses or not. Because I think with Ed, both the Eds actually, they are actual glasses wearers. But there's something about wearing glasses which is not allowed in modern
politics. They've ended up with contacts, haven't they?
And I said before, I'll say it again, I think Ed should not be afraid to wear glasses. You know, he couldn't do himself no harm there. And bring comfort to glasses wearers as well everywhere, I think.
There's a tip. We'll stop now. A tip from the top. Wear glasses, Ed, says Steve Bell. It'll make my job easier. Thanks. Right. I have to say that the Miliband speech today produced mixed reactions. A number of old Labour sweats seemed perfectly happy. Others thought it was a bit flat. One thought it was a bit focused on the younger generation. He sort of knew why, but he found it irritating. Some of my press colleagues thought it was all a bit flat and a bit windy and imprecise too. So it'll be interesting to see what the papers make of it in the morning. But, of course, it may be tomorrow, we're not quite sure when, that we get the drama of David Miliband's decision resolved. Will he jump or will he stay? And when he does, that should wrap up this rather dramatic week of the Labour Party conference, though it will stagger on until Thursday morning. We've got the Tories next week in Birmingham. David Cameron's first big speech as Prime Minister, but of course it's Prime Minister in a coalition with the Lib Dems. Not what a lot of his party wants at all, and some of them will be unhappy, and he'll have to soothe them down. It's been the theme of this year's conferences. Unexpected development in British politics, the coalition, everybody's a bit wrong-footed. That's all from me in Manchester. I'll be in Birmingham on Monday, where we'll hear how the Tories are dealing with their own problems and responding to Ed Miliband's challenge. Are they delighted that he won the leadership? Or after today's speech, perhaps a little nervous? The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Mike White. Bye for now. Hope to see you next week.